to introduce you now to Evan. Evan's hiding at the back somewhere. Evan from Instant Neighbour, one of the food bank charities that we support here in church. And I invited Evan to come along and share with us just some of the work that Instant Neighbour do and how, in the context of our Advent season, it's important that we can think about how we can play our part. Evan.
Good morning. Thanks, Shuna, for inviting me this morning. And I want to thank all of you for the continued support you've offered us for however long you have. I don't know how long you have. I've only been in this job for 8 weeks, so I'm still learning the ropes. But thank you. Thank you so much. Instant Neighbour's motto is help today gives hope for tomorrow. Unfortunately, the society we live in, as Shona spoke about earlier with these little advent calendars, but it's a very commercial society that we live in. We're always told, you should have this, you want this, you need to buy this. And at Instant Neighbour, where I run the food bank, it's unfortunately one of the things I'm seeing in people on the lowest of incomes, in desperate poverty, still wanting things, still wanting to buy things. Which means they're coming to a food bank for food. That's horrible. It's horrible that society has made people feel that they still should be able to get nice things because there's food banks available. Ultimately, I don't want to be in this job. I shouldn't have this job. This job shouldn't be here. But it is. And don't get me wrong, most of my clients don't have chaotic enough lifestyles to want to buy things rather than buy food. I deal with a lot of people on benefits. I deal with a lot of people who are immigrants. I deal with a lot of people who do live tragic, chaotic lifestyles. And just basics like food, the fact that people don't have it, don't have access to it, is horrific. I'm not going to get political, but your continued support for the food banks is desperately, desperately needed, especially at this time of year. I was at a meeting a couple of weeks ago with people who run food banks all over Scotland. And in Edinburgh, there are 9 food banks. In Aberdeen, there's over 20. The disparity between wealth and poverty in Aberdeen is astonishing. I'm based at our St. Macher headquarters, so we are right in one of the poorest areas in Aberdeen. And the poverty that I see every day is upsetting, it's terrifying. And they do say that we're only ever 3 months away from being homeless. The reason I can agree with that is that this time last year I was officially homeless. I found myself in a position where I was sleeping on the streets. I was coming through homeless hostels. But I worked really hard, negotiating the minefield that is the benefit system. Got myself back on my feet, and I've landed this incredible role where I can use my experience to offer hope to our users. And that's one thing that's lacking in a lot of my clients is hope. They don't see a way out of their situation. They live from day to day. And a lot of us have been there, whether it's financially, whether it's emotionally. Just getting by day to day is a struggle. And what we aim to do at Instant Neighbour is to offer hope. Yes, we have the food bank, and that's kind of my big thing. That's what I run. But we offer a lot of facilities to people. In conjunction with the government offering the baby boxes, we offer a safe and sound service, which is access to a lending service for baby equipment, prams, stuff like that. We have our shops, and every penny from our shops goes back in to help in the community. So if you've ever got any furniture that you need rid of, give us a shout. We'll come and pick it up for you, and we will pass it on to those that really need it. we run various initiatives where we can make the money to be able to offer hope to people on a low income. Just check out our website. I don't want to do a massive appeal here this morning, but check out our website. You'll see everything that we do. The big thing that we do require at this time of year is volunteers. So I am going to appeal to you for that. If any of you feel you can offer a bit of time, we have a warehouse where we need to sort through all our donations. We have the food bank. We need to sort through the food bank donations. Our biggest thing at this time of year, though, is the Giving Tree. And I'm sure if you've been round about Aberdeen, you've seen the Christmas tree with the wee tags in it, with the kids' names and ages. And it's Instant Neighbour that runs that. Because we believe no child should wake up on Christmas morning without a present. And it's an increasing, it's grown and grown and grown. This is our 28th year of doing it. Last year we handed out over 8,000 Christmas presents. So this year we'll probably beat that. We've had, I think, more than 8,000 people have registered for it. So if you can offer any time to help wrap some presents, if you go to our website and go to the Giving Tree section, you can get in touch with them. And Karen, our Giving Tree coordinator, would be delighted of the help, because at the moment she's sitting up at the Chevron offices in a mountain of presents, wondering where to start. So if you can offer any time. But yeah, our main thing is hope. Help today to offer hope for tomorrow. We want to be able to show people that even though life is hard, even though life is tough, if they can take control, if they can be offered some support, some care, then it does offer a bit of hope tomorrow. And yeah, that is Instant Neighbour. And thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you, Evan. Thank you very much. Evan has given us lots to think about there. I think one of the things about being able to offer hope is for folk to know that there are people in this city who actually care. And one way we can show we care is by donating, volunteering our time and helping in whatever way we can. So I've already mentioned this Advent. We're going to explore some of the birth narratives in the Bible as we wait and anticipate the birth of Jesus Christ. That God came among us as a tiny baby born of a fully human woman is one of the most incredible parts of God's story. Why a tiny child? We all probably know stories about tiny babies achieving great things, even the tiniest. Andy, my son, told me the other night about Tyson Fury, the heavyweight boxer who was boxing last night. He only weighed 1 pound when he was born 3 months premature. And at the weigh-in for last night's fight, he weighed in at 18 stone, 4.5 pounds. The tiniest of babies has grown into a champion heavyweight boxer. Not the obvious outcome from such a difficult start in life. And of course, last night he drew. He didn't win his fight, but he drew. But still a marvellous achievement. God has the habit of choosing the unobvious. Moses is a great example. He had a difficult start in life, but thankfully had some resourceful women in his family. Women may often find themselves nameless in the Bible, but they often play key roles in what's going on. For example, Moses' mother. We're not given her name at this point in the story. It's only later that we learn in Exodus that her name is Jochebed. There's a Samaritan woman at the well. She remains nameless. Mary, mother of Jesus, we know her name. The woman who went to the tomb. Lydia, who went on to lead a church. Women playing key roles despite a patriarchal society and latterly a patriarchal church. And women are all over Moses' story. There was his mother, the princess, his sister, the king's daughter. Women playing key roles. And we'll hear more stories about women over the coming weeks, because we cannot escape the truth that without these women, there would be no Moses, no Samson, no John the Baptist, no Jesus. And as we share in the births of Moses, Samson, John, and Jesus, we'll explore what they and their mother's stories have to say to us today. So let's begin with Moses, whose birth story we heard this morning. Here we have the story of a mother doing what she can to protect her child. The Israelites are in danger. A new king has taken over Egypt and their oppression has started. The king is so scared that the Israelites will join forces with his country's enemies. He issues a decree that all newborn Hebrew boys be thrown in the Nile. And it's in this context that Moses' mother gives birth to him. So she does what she can to keep him safe, hiding him in the bushes where he's found by a princess who arranges for the king's daughter to adopt him, unaware that the wet nurse she employs is actually Moses' own mother. The story raises difficult parallels today as we see images of refugees across the world seeking to protect their children and give them a chance for life, even though it may involve immediate risk. We see this in the lives and the stories of families fleeing on rafts across the Mediterranean and Aegean Seas, or at the US-Mexican border. This tells you something very important about the situations these families are fleeing, that they are willing to risk so much, including the lives of their own children. The image this week of a mother and her young children running from the tear gas at the Mexican border has haunted me. When I watched the President of the United States sitting behind his desk tell those in attendance that the tear gas is a very minor form of tear gas, I wanted to scream, "Mr. President, these are children, babies." And so the echoes to ancient Israel and Egypt are loud and clear. As Egypt begins the oppression, we find the joy and hope of Jacob's family finding new life with Joseph in Egypt has turned to a bitter heartache and an agony as the Hebrews find themselves enslaved and under a paranoid Pharaoh intent on their oppression. With a genocidal command to eliminate a generation of boys providing the ghastly impetus, the only hope for a young mother desperate to save her son lies in the papyrus basket placed amongst the reeds. It's her way of trying to take control of the situation as much as she can, and cleverly knowing this was a spot used by Pharaoh's daughter to bathe. The mother of Moses relies on the compassion of another woman, and it proves to be a good call. As the story unfolds, the canniness of Moses' family is fully borne out as his sister Miriam manages to arrange for the boy's own mother to act as wet nurse, thereby keeping her bond with her child as he grew up. The women, from midwives to mothers and daughters, find ways to overcome the power of the Pharaoh. In the animated musical version of the first part of Moses' story, The Prince of Egypt, there's a song in it which is Miriam that sings these words. "Many nights we've prayed with no proof anyone could hear. In our hearts a hopeful song we barely understood. Now we are not afraid. Although we know there's much to fear, we are moving mountains. Long before we knew we could. There can be miracles when you believe. Though hope is frail, it's hard to kill." Sometimes all we can do is hope through the bleak present that it will get better. And little by little, act by small gracious act, it can. This Advent Sunday, as we watch our hope candle flicker, my prayer is certainly one of hope. Hope that the world can become a nicer place for all of us. Hope that the hateful rhetoric about the other becomes a thing of the past. Hope that the need for food banks and Evan's job disappears. Hope that the retelling of the birth of Jesus becomes again the central part of everyone's Christmas. And I base that hope on the reassurance that God's story is not finished and God is not finished with us. We sang at the beginning of the service these words, Hope is a candle once lit by the prophets, never consumed though it burns through the years, dim in the daylight of power and privilege. When they are gone, hope will shine on. Christ is the light that the prophets awaited. Christ is the lion, the lamb, and the child. Christ is the love and the mystery and laughter. Candles make way. Christ is the day. Christ remains today's hope. Amen.